My name is Ed Goldberg, and I have the pleasure of speaking to Joe Nesbø. Joe, welcome to Portland.
Thank you.
Joe, you're from Norway, from Oslo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the title of your book is The Devil's Star, and it's published by HarperCollins. And let me tell the people a little bit about you. You're a musician, songwriter, and economist. That's not the usual combination of things, is it?
I guess not.
Joe Nesbø is also one of Europe's most acclaimed crime writers. Nesbø is the winner of the Glass Key Award. Congratulations, that's very good. Northern Europe's most prestigious crime fiction prize for your first novel featuring detective Harry Hole. Joe Nesbø worked as a freelance journalist and a stockbroker. There's another thing. before he began his writing career, the number one national bestseller, The Batman, is the first installment in the Harry Hole series, but we haven't seen that one here.
No, it hasn't been translated, and that's because it's about Harry being sent from Oslo to Sydney. Mm-hmm. And we thought that it was a bit, you know, far-fetched to try to export a book about a Norwegian guy in he's not even in Norway,
it's
Australia.
Let's see, Dr. Proctor's Prompapulver. What is a Prompapulver?
Oh, that's a fart powder. So it's a very powerful fart powder. That's a children's book, of course. And the Dr. Proctor is actually trying to sell this fart powder to the United States, to NASA, because he reckons it's cheaper, you know, to send astronauts into space with a fart powder instead of a shuttle. Yeah.
So this is a children's book, and it's been compared to Roald Dahl. I think that's a very high recommendation.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about The Devil's Star. Now, you've written 7 or 8 Harry Hole books, but only 3 have been translated so far. Do you have any hand in the translation? Do you do the translation yourself, or?
I don't. There's an English guy, Don Bartlett, who does the translation, and he has actually translated 5 novels in the series by now. 5 have been published in the UK. But so far only 3 in the US, so you are a little behind. But you will have the next 2 novels over the next 2 years.
Oh, now I've read Redbreast and this one, The Devil's Star, Nemesis, the middle one. I've missed, but I'll catch up on that one. Although I kind of know what some of the plot points will be turning out to be. But
yeah, there is a storyline that goes over the three books. Of course, they are standalone novels, so you can read them. You don't have to read them in order, but I have put in some bonuses for the loyal reader.
Okay, now you have a great opening scene in this book, which involves water dripping from an apartment above into an apartment below, but it's preceded by a discussion about architecture and building materials and classic building materials in Oslo. Can you tell us a little bit about the opening scene of the book?
Well, it's water that runs over a wooden floor, and then, as you said, when the water hits the wall, it starts creeping down through the different layers in the floor. And like you said, that's a sort of a mini history of the city of Oslo, because you can tell from the material what kind of city it is and the history of the city. And it also creeps through a layer of old newspapers. And there's a story in the newspaper about the girl who has been found murdered in the borough of Grünerløkka. And the journalist is speculating whether this might have something to do with 2 other girls that has been found killed. And this is around 1890. And then the water creeps down to the ceiling, and it starts dripping into a kettle of boiling water. A woman comes into the kitchen, and she looks into the kettle, and she can see that among the potatoes there are some black lumps. And her husband comes in, and he looks into the kettle, and he picks up one of the lumps, and he looks at it, and he tastes the lump. And he says it tastes like egg. And then he can feel the water dripping on his head. And he looks up and he says, okay, there's a flood. We have to call the caretaker. There's something wrong in the apartment above. And the woman, being a professional cook, says that you call the caretaker. I'll call the police. Because she knows what happens to blood if you put it in boiling water.
Wow.
And how it will taste.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great opening scene, and it's a classic, really, because if you grab the reader in the first few pages of the book, you have the reader for the whole book, and you certainly did it there. Why did you come to writing mysteries? I mean, you could have written anything. You could have been writing, you write children's books, but you could have been writing science fiction. You could have been writing mainstream novels. What interested you in mysteries?
To some extent, it was a coincidence, or I chose to write a crime novel because I had, this was in 97. I had been working as a stockbroker while traveling with my band, because we had had 2 years earlier, we had had this big success with our second album. And that year we did 180 gigs while I was still, you know, I had promised my mother that I would keep my day job. The rest of the band played full time, but I was the singer in the band and the songwriter, but I was the only one who, you know,
had to get up in the morning.
I had to, you know, we were traveling all over the country. So my life would be, I would be at my office, with the brokerage firm, until the stock exchange closed at 4 o'clock. And you would hear a bell and I would grab my bag under the desk, run into the street, get a cab, take the cab to the airport and take a plane to wherever my band was at that time, you know, and maybe in time for the sound check, hopefully in time for the gig. And after the gig was finished at sometime after midnight, the rest of the guys in the band would go off to some party with some beautiful girls, and I would go back to the hotel to get some hours sleep to get the first plane back to Oslo, hopefully in time for when the stock exchange opened at 9 o'clock. And then when it closed at 4 o'clock, I would, you know, grab my bag, run into the street, get a cab. My life was like that for 1 year, and I was totally exhausted. And
it's a good thing you were young.
Yeah, well, I went to my boss and said that I had to take 6 months off because, you know, just to survive. And he said, okay. And I went to my band and I said that I won't be touring for a long, long time. So I'm off to Australia. And then I brought a laptop, and I had planned for some time to write a novel. But I hadn't decided whether it would be a crime novel or some other novel, but I had also seen, you know, lots of my friends who at young age really wanted to be writers. They started, you know, on this complex, big European novel on the first attempt, and they, of course, never finished that novel.
Thomas Mann. They wanted to be Thomas Mann right off the bat, huh?
Yeah.
Some big, important philosophical...
Exactly. Yeah. And I thought, how about being Jim Thompson?
What a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, there already was a Jim Thompson. Yeah. He's like a second
Nobody had heard about him. So I, at least not in Norway at the time. And he was like my only, you know, for those of you who don't know, Jim Thompson, he's an American great writer, wrote in the 50s and 60s.
Right. If you read any, you have to read Population 1280 and The Killer Inside.
Oh, right. That's my two favorite novels.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, so I decided I would write a crime novel because I had a pretty good idea of how I could do that. You know, it's a story with a head and a tail, and I could finish it in 6 months. And I had also worked on or thought about this character, Harry Hole, for a while. Sort of a man with... many contradictions. This,
say his name in Norwegian, just so people.
It's Harry Hole, which is a quite common Norwegian name. Mm-hmm. At least his last name. And but it was I used the name also for, you know, he's going to Australia in the first novel, so they're a bit embarrassed about his last name.
It's a bit of an obscene pun,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. So they're asking how to pronounce it, whether it's Hole or Holy, and. On the plane from Oslo to Sydney, that takes about 35 hours. I came up with a plot for my first novel. I was in Australia for 5 weeks, and I wrote from, you know, 2 hours after I had landed in Sydney. I booked into a hotel, and I started writing. And, you know, I spent 5 weeks in sunny, beautiful Sydney. Most of the time sitting in a small, dark hotel room, just writing and writing. And
writers are nuts, aren't they?
It was a kick, you know. I realized that I had been waiting so many years to do this. So I would, you know, run off, grab something to eat, and then run back to the hotel room. And when I came back, I had written The Batman, and I sent it to my publishing house. And after 3 weeks, they phoned me back and said that they were interested in the novel and asked me how long it had taken me to write a novel, and I said 2 years, and they said, great.
Well, songwriting is such a compact art. I mean, you have to say everything you need to say in just a few lines. It's symbolic or it's brutally short and blunt, whereas with a novel, you have a long form. You can stretch out. It's hard to fill up the middle in a novel. You may know what the beginning and the end is, but it's sometimes hard to fill up the middle. How did your skills as a songwriter translate, or didn't they? Did you have to relearn the whole thing?
You know, what I realized, because I thought the same thing, that okay, here you have to go on and sort of talk and have enough stuff to fill in, like you said, the middle part. But I soon realized that it's exactly the same as songwriting, as writing lyrics. You have to trust the reader. You can't tell the whole story yourself. You can only give them hints. You know, they have to fill in the characters, the backdrop, everything. And if you start, you know, going on in detail in things that has nothing to do with the story, you are going to lose your reader. They are going to lose interest. So I found out that it's exactly the same as writing lyrics. You have to, you know, nowadays when I write a novel, I spend more time taking things away after I'd written the first version than I do, you know, putting things in. Mm-hmm. So you have to be short and to the point.
It's like a sculptor once told me. He says you start out with a block of wood, and you cut away everything that doesn't look like a statue.
Yeah, and that's my method when I work. Also, when I write synopses, resumes, I work on that for a long, long time. So when I actually sit down and start writing chapter one, I've been working on the book for like a year, and my only job is to not create a story, but just to retell a story that's already there.
Let me remind our listeners that I'm speaking with Joe Nesbo. Let me spell his name. It's J-O, last name N-E-S-B-O, one of those O's with the lines in it, which you say is Nesbo, but we'll call you Nesbo, right?
Thanks.
And the title of the book is The Devil's Star. We'll get to that in a minute, and it's published by Harper. I know that Swedes and Norwegians don't necessarily consider themselves very close. You know, they've had a kind of a sad history between them. But Americans all tend to think of Scandinavians. Mm. And Scandinavians have been much read lately in this country. The late Stieg Larsson, his books, they're making him into movies. Henning Mankell is another writer whose books have been translated over here. Now you. What's going on in Scandinavia? What's going on in the is it the dark winters? What is it?
Probably. I mean, the dark winters, I think, definitely has something to do with it. But also, there's a long tradition for crime writing in Scandinavia, dating back to the 70s, when two Swedish writers, Sjöwall and Wahlöö, were writing, you know, this new kind of crime fiction that had to do with, you know, society. They used the crime genre as a sort of a vehicle for their criticism of society. And they were great writers, and it inspired other young storytellers to write crime stories instead of mainstream fiction or going into other genres. And over the years, there's been many great Scandinavian crime writers, but they didn't, you know, export their fiction. But in the 90s, there was, especially in Norway, three or four brilliant female crime writers. And they sort of paved the way for other crime writers. And nowadays, the last few years, both in Sweden and Norway, I think that the crime scene or the crime fiction scene sort of recruits the best storytelling talents. So there's so many crime writers there right now that's just really good. And what you have read here in the United States is sort of tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, a tiny little part. You mentioned Jim Thompson. Did you have an influence from American writers as well as the Scandinavian writers?
I did. Actually, I don't think that the Scandinavian writers was my main influence. I've been reading since I was a kid, but I didn't really read that much crime fiction. But I found an American favorite, that was Jim Thompson. Of course, I read Raymond Chandler And
God. He's the personal God. Yes.
I see. Yeah. But he was. But Jim Thompson. Jim Thompson. He's a bit darker. So he was. You know, closer to my heart, and also
not just actually, darker, but more distilled. He does everything in a much smaller and tighter package than Chandler.
Yeah,
does.
And it was great because he's like this guy trying to make money to pay his rent, and so he's trying to be commercial, like he's trying to be easy.
Yeah.
But his mind is so complex, you know, and his dialogue is just great. So I just love reading him. But also graphic novels. Mm-hmm. Frank Miller, the man behind the Sin City series, that's been a
great movie.
They made a great movie.
Let's talk about The Devil's Star. Now, we talked about this a little bit before. I don't want to give too much of the plot away, so you can stop me if I get a little too close. But let's start with Harry, because Harry, I don't know why it is that mystery writers love to make their main characters a mess, but Harry is a mess.
Mm.
He's a drunk.
Mm.
He's lonely and depressed. He's very, very clever, but he's made some enemies, not intentionally generally, but just because that's the kind of a guy he is. He tends to rub people the wrong way. Mm. In the book I read, Redbreast, his partner, a young woman, is murdered. And this sends him just deeper into himself, and it makes him darker. What do you want us to know about Harry Hole?
Part of the reason why I came up with the name Hole or Hole was that he is a sort of a black hole. People that, you know, come too close to him, they will sort of disappear, and that's his experience in life. You know that people that he loves will be taken away from him. So I think that's part of the reason why he's a loner.
He's a complete pessimist.
He is definitely. His alcoholism is. He is not the usual American hard-boiled detective who is thirsty and who wakes up in the morning hungover and he's making cool remarks about it. He's a full-blown alcoholist, and he has been since he was 20. Now, alcoholism runs in his family. That's part of the reason, but also he has had some sad experiences in his life. His mother died at a young age, and also his first girlfriend committed suicide. But he's also a romantic guy. He sort of believes in love, he easily falls in love. And he also is optimistic in the way that he does really believe in society, you know, in this sort of social
contract.
Democrat model that we have in Scandinavia. He believes in law and order. But on the other hand, he finds no pleasure in catching the criminals. That is always like an anti-climax to him.
He likes the chase.
He likes to chase, but not the catching. Not he also he is drifting toward the dark side. He is coming more and more similar to the people that he's chasing.
That's one of the great conundrums of crime fiction, is that what real difference is there sometimes between the hunter and the hunted, and sometimes not very much.
Yeah, and an essential question is, of course, does crime exist? Meaning that do you really, is there like any crime that will always be a crime, or is it a matter of what time you're born into, what culture you're born into, that sort of decides whether you be a criminal or not? These are interesting questions, and I do not discuss them explicit in my novels.
No, that would be boring.
But they're all there.
Mm-hmm. I may be just finding this and it's not there, but I detect a certain anti-fascist current running through the books. There's maybe that's too strong a word. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think especially in the Redbreast that deals with the Norwegian war history. But that's a it does deal with neo-Nazism in Norway, but it's not like that's not a political problem in Norway and Scandinavia.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah, it's more it has to do with revolt. They have never represented like a political alternative for anybody, I think. But it's interesting to see that people, you know, that they are attracted by these kind of movements. Some people.
Too young to remember what the consequences are.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, and again, Tom Waller. Tom Waller is in all the three books that are available over here. He has an uneasy relationship with Harry. And in Redbreast, we understand why. Harry has a real thought that it was he somehow, that Waller somehow was responsible for his partner's death. Tell us about Tom Waller.
He's the big antagonist of the three novels from that's also been called the Oslo trilogy, which is started with the Redbreast and then Nemesis and Mallet's novel The Devil Star. But if you read about him in all the three books, you will see how similar he is to Harry. In the first book, he seems like, you know, quite the opposite to Harry. But they do share some in the characters, they do share a lot.
He has a belief and he's really passionate about it.
Right. Yeah. He is. And he's a loner too. And he is. I put in one interesting thing there. He's a big fan of Prince. He listens to Prince all the time. Yes. And I'm a Prince fan. So it was. I had to put in something, you know, to make him likable in a way, you know, something that I could relate to.
I found that very amusing, actually. Yeah, that he would be a Prince fan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah, because he's a full-blown racist. I mean,
Well, it's how many full-blown racists have been fans of black athletes and black entertainers, and how many full-blown white racists look like hip-hop kids, you know, from the ghetto now. So.
Yeah.
Harry has a discussion with one of the characters in the book, somebody he's actually chasing because he's a suspect. They talk about Iggy Pop. I thought that was hysterical, that each of them is an Iggy Pop fan.
I can't. It's 8 years since I wrote the book.
I guess there's no question there, was there? But here I am saying, oh, you know, I really love Iggy Pop. I think that I Want to Be Your Dog is one of the great rock and roll songs of all time. And here's this cop talking to this... Yeah. Perp, you know, about Iggy Pop. That's pretty funny. One of the things I do to pass the time is tell me all the Iggy Pop songs, you know, beginning with the letter C. They just got the whole list.
Yeah, right.
I know you're a musician, so clearly you're also a fan of Iggy Pop, but I see that informs what you're doing, too. You try to throw some cultural references, and I think that's because you're that way.
I think that one of the privileges as a writer is that you can put in your, you know, your preferences in popular culture, you know, and use it, having your, you know, your the good guy promoting your preferences, or some other people. But then again, I try not to do it too much. I mean, I love George Pelicanos. He is actually one of my favorite writers. But sometimes, you know, I think these popular references they are a bit strained, you know, because every person in his novel is listening to a special radio channel, you know, and it I don't know if I believe that, but but you know you have to because then again popular references to popular culture it tells you so much about the person. I mean, like, take American Psycho. You have the main character talking about giving a long speech about Genesis, the group of English band of Genesis, and how much better it is after Peter Gabriel quit the band and you had Phil Collins starting to sing. Yeah. Now, that tells a lot about the character.
It sure does. Know? Yeah, I don't want to discuss
that's
that.
That's scary.
Yeah, it really is. I'm going to get into the plot a little bit. We have maybe 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left. The Devil's Star. There are three young women who are murdered in this book, and one of them. You have a way of disposing of a corpse, which I found one of the most creative I've heard of in a long time. The waterbed thing. And that's all I'll say about it. But each of them is found on their person. In one case, under an eyelid, with a tiny diamond. You want to tell us about that?
It's a tiny diamond formed as a five-pointed star, and also one of her fingers is cut off. And what I can say without going too much into the plot is that number five is an important number is in this book.
Mm-hmm.
It's also my fifth book.
Oh, okay.
So I was I was thinking about just calling
the number,
it
number
five.
Number five was up. That was it, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there was a book called Seven. People would think it was a follow-up to that. So
yeah.
One of the things that you've done in this to make Harry's life even more miserable is that at the beginning, he's thrown off the force. He's given his notice and saying, you know, you're gone. You know, you're such a mess and you're so screwed up and you've screwed up this case so badly, you're gone. But one of the things that you've done at the beginning is because he has lost his partner, they partner up him up with Tom Waller.
Mm-hmm.
So not only does he have to deal with his own grief, and not only does he have to deal with the case, he has to also deal with the fact that he has to see Tom Waller in a daily on a daily basis. When you came up with that idea, did you think it would work? Because I think it does work in the book.
The thing is that as I said, he is becoming more and more like Tom Waller. And so I think it's so painful for him to work with him. Not only does he more or less know that Tom Waller was behind the death of his colleague and best friend in the Redbreast, but he is also like he's becoming like a mirror for Harry. You know, he can see all his own shortcomings and his own moral decay, you know, in Tom Waller. So I think that it's interesting that so many readers have sort of got seen that point, you know, mm-hmm. of them being more and more alike each other.
This is it's been wonderful talking to you. I certainly hope you're able to come back again. This is the last stop in your tour, but let me remind our listeners, I'm speaking with Joe Nesbo. It's spelled J-O, first name, N-E-S-B-O. Title of the book is The Devil's Star, published by Harper. And I recommend, maybe you shouldn't start with this book. Maybe you should go back to Redbreast, and I'm going to read Nemesis first chance I get. Joe, thanks very much for coming.
Thanks for having me.